And would you please remain standing as the invocation is going to be given by Pastor James Anderson of Christian Love Baptist Church.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our Heavenly Father, it is once again that you have allowed me to stand in this place before the appointed officials, political administrative officials of this city. It is my desire that they covet such a position, responsibility for the good of all the residents and not for personal gain or notoriety. May they dream as I dream for Modesto to be a model city for other cities to model after, where employment can be found, affordable housing can be purchased, parks and streets are safe places, where human trafficking is eradicated, homelessness is minimized, mentally ill can be treated and housed, where policing is desirable and safe. I pray that my prayer is not in vain. Therefore, once again, I beg that you bless our city, our county, and state, that you might be glorified. In Jesus' name, my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, amen.
Thank you, Pastor. Today we have the Red Ribbon Week of 2016 Best Decorated School Contest, and the recognition will be presented by Charlene Monte and Elizabeth Escalante of the Stanislaus County Office of Education.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith and the Honorable Board of Supervisors. My name is Charlene Monte, and these are my colleagues Elizabeth Escalante and Rachel Valenzuela. We're here from the Stanislaus County Office of Education in the Prevention Programs Department. And we're here to present the awards for the school sites who won the Best Decorated, Most Spirited Schools Contest. Before we begin, we wish to extend a very special thank you to the Board of Supervisors for this opportunity, year after year, allowing us to come here and present this award. It's a great honor for us as well as for our school sites.
So the Red Ribbon Week is a national awareness campaign that highlights the dangers of alcohol, tobacco, and all other drug use. Each year, students, school site staff, parents, and the community all come together and ensure a successful event, including all the activities and during the whole week. Drug, alcohol, and tobacco use awareness is provided through different venues, different rallies, activities, poetry contests, assemblies. Those are just to name a few. This year we had 29 schools participate in the contest, and we are here to celebrate their accomplishments. And so this is again the awards for the Best Decorated, Most Spirited Schools Contest. And these are the winners of our county.
So each school site will receive a winner's plaque, which we have here with us, and also a certificate from the Stanislaus County Office of Education. So let's start and bring up the winners. We're going to start with the elementary division. And third place, we had Osborne Two-Way Immersion Academy, and they are here to receive their award. Come on up, Osborne. Another round of applause for Osborne. And then we have second place is California Avenue. So a round of applause for California Avenue Elementary. Come on up, you guys. And our first place winners are from Houston, and it's Fox Road Elementary. Come on up, you guys. And I happen to be the judge for this group, and oh my goodness, I felt like royalty. They all sang to me, and they were waving at me as I walked through. It was fantastic. Good job, you guys.
And now we're moving on to our middle school, junior high school portion of the awards. And we would like to bring up our third place winner, which is Turlock Junior High. And I believe we have a representative from Turlock, Mr. Pat Villapudua. He didn't want a picture with us. It's okay. I'm just kidding. Second place, we're going to bring up Creekside Middle School, and they're from Patterson. And our first place winner for this category is Oakdale Junior High. So if we want to have them come up. Then we move on to our high school category, and for third place, we have Elliott Alternative High School, and their students, come on up. Thank you, guys. And then second place, we have Davis High School from Modesto. Come on up. Are they over here? And our first place winners for the Best Decorated, Most Spirited Schools contest in the high school division is Houston High School. Once again, thank you very much for this opportunity. All of these schools worked really hard to put on all the activities that they did. So thanks again, guys.
On behalf of the Board of Supervisors, we'd like to congratulate all you students in participating, and congratulations. Job well done, and thank you for being involved in our community. Thank you.
Yeah.
We will now go on to public comment, and there's a request by Carmen Sabatino.
Good morning. The clerk has a copy of a letter that was hand-delivered to Stanislaus County to the office of John P. Doering, County Council. I only had four copies. The letter was sent September 27, 2016. Briefly, I asked for 13 items that I wanted public records to. I received a reply, not by Mr. Doering, but by his deputy, that they now have 3,500 pages of records for my, that 25 cents a page. You know, as a former mayor of Modesto, I know the drill. Do not attempt to bury my request in reams of paper, but you already have. In any event, the request was a report produced by then solid waste manager to the city of Modesto, Jocelyn Reed, dated February 10th, 2004, entitled Review of All Water Use and Orchard Acreage on County-Owned Fink Road Landfill. I won't go into the report. You'll have a copy, and you can read it for yourself. I was astounded to see that the Modesto Bee, once again, in the way they look at things, had a story here about under settlement, Modesto would pay manager $236,000 not to work. The Bee should, if they have any chance at all, they should apologize and retract this story. Because the real story is that the city of Modesto, and by your partnership with them, has paid $300,000 for Jocelyn Reed's silence. Now, Jocelyn Reed was head of waste management when I was mayor. My biggest fear at the time was that the county would hire her away from us. But she did produce the reports. I have come to you with partial reports. And so what I wish I had my glasses. I do have my glasses. What the city has purchased, according to the agreement, she's promising not to sue. She is promising not to testify. She is promising that, and she is saying that the city has no wrongdoing. Then the city says, the city treated Ms. Reed in a lawful and fair manner. In the end, we have to do what's right for Modesto. Lopez added that in reaching the settlement, the city considered the high cost of defending itself if Reed filed a lawsuit. I do know this, that somewhere along the line, we have to stop what we're doing here. You do have the copies. The city now has refused to disclose the nature of the investigations. Okay, I can't find the other thing, but in essence, what they've done is they've purchased her silence. But the fact is, she will be deposed. And according to what lawyers are telling us now, she will be forced to answer questions about the $19 million that this county and this city overcharged the ratepayers of Stanislaus County, bought a piece of land for $14 million that was appraised at $10.75 million, bought 367 acres of orchard land, but the aerial photographs that were done by Jocelyn Reed showed there weren't any trees there. So you paid $8,000, if you were here at the time, for 367 acres of land that was worth $800. I once used the word accountability, and with what we have here, unless I receive the documents I've asked for, I'll ask for another agency. In fact, I'll take that back. I'm going to forward this to other agencies and have them take over from where we hope we're going. And where we hope we're going is to tell people in this community what is going on with their money. And unfortunately, instead of a story, I get this in a Modesto B. We're going to pay her $236,000 not to work. Jocelyn Reed was taken from her desk in this building and put out on the sidewalk. Mr. Doran,
okay.
I'd appreciate it if you would sign your own letters, because all documents I will refer to other agencies will have your signature. Thank you.
Thank you, Carmen. Also, Charles Neal.
Thank you, Chairman Martinez. I'm very sorry that I failed to go through your protocol. I didn't let you know that I wanted to speak. It's an honor and a privilege. My name is Charles Neal. I live at 2312 Rio Verde Drive, Riverbank, California, to come to you this morning and to thank Bill O'Brien for his service, for the service that he gave to a member of our church that had a problem with one of your agencies. I wanted to personally come here and thank him, because that individual came to me. I looked at what she had and determined that there had been some type of bad communications or maybe a mistake made. I went to Mr. O'Brien early in the morning, one morning, and gave him the necessary paperwork that I had. By that afternoon, I had a text, a phone call. Things were moving. Things were taken care of. Gorton Ford, the very next day, his staff had already taken care of the problem, relieved the lady of the responsibility that the mistake was made on. And I think that, you know, when we have public servants that do serve the public, it behooves us to come and show respect and let other people know that that they are serving the public, they're serving them in a manner that they should. And I just wanted to come down here. This happened back in the summer, and with the church food program we have on Tuesday, I've been unable to make it down here. But I made it a point today. I wanted to get here before, you know, before Mr. O'Brien left. And I'm going to have to say that, metaphorically speaking, Christy Olson has a large set of shoes to fill in that district, because Bill O'Brien has served us well, and he's done an excellent job. He's provided. I've seen him since he was a council member in Riverbank, and he's come right up, and here he is now. I'm looking forward to the next position that he's elected to, because I know that he'll do an outstanding job. Thank you very much for the honor and privilege to come here. Thank you, and you guys have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Neal, I owe you a debt of gratitude. A lot of times people won't take the time or feel a little scared or nervous contacting us on issues, and they contact you. You're very well entrenched in Riverbank, and I appreciate the role that you do to be the voice of some people who aren't willing to come forward on issues. So I want to thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Have a great day.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any comment to make at this time that's not on today's agenda? If not, we will go on. I ask the board, does anyone wish to pull anything on this agenda? If not, before the consent calendar, before the board takes any action on the consent calendar, does anyone in the audience wish to make a comment or have a question on any matter on the consent calendar? Anyone wishing to make any comments? If not, I'll bring it back to the board, and what's your wish?
Motion to approve the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. Thank you very much. We now will go to A7, Lee Lundergan.
Hello, Chairman Monteith. This is Lee Lundergan, County Clerk Recorder and Registrar of Voters, CEO Ryzen, our County Council, Jack Doring, and members of the board. I am here to bring to you the statement of the vote for the presidential general election, which took place on November the 8th. That was certified yesterday and delivered to the Secretary of State's office, and we're bringing it to the board today. I have, this is really a day of accomplishment. And it's accomplishment on behalf of various people who work for this county and worked very, very hard. I think it's an accomplishment by the voters themselves and all of the individuals who worked out at the polls. I want to personally thank the my staff. We have 9 staff members and 30 extra help who worked tirelessly on this election, up to 12 hours a day to get it done. A huge amount of vote by mails. The largest we've ever had. Everything on this election was the largest we've ever had, so I'll enumerate them in a second. I want to thank those individuals who are here in the audience with me today. I'm going to ask them to stand. Mark Lozier, Jeremy Howell, Michelle Gutierrez, Marnie Artis, Kathy Stiles, and Donna Linder. So this is our leadership team. Thank you. And I wanted them to be down here. Also, we have a tech team led by Aaron Rosa, who did a sterling job on this. And one of our managers who was not able to be here today, Maria Rocha, who worked also very hard. This election was superlative, could be used for almost every aspect of it. It was the largest number of registered voters Stanislaus County has had in history, 241,196. The largest we'd ever had before that was in the 230,000 range. So we have over 10,000 more people registered to vote, and they voted. We had 73% of those voters turned out at the polls and voted, 73.38 to be exact. The largest we'd ever had before this was an election that took place, a presidential, and it was just around 70. So more percentages than we've had before. In the 73% range is also the number of people who voted by mail. So 73% of the 73% voted by mail. A huge turnout in vote by mail. It was great. We had a number of people that voted at the polls. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess for them, over 13,000 voted provisionally. And that is what took this election a very long time to get through and to certify. In addition to that, rosters had to be reviewed and basically made sure that they showed the same amount of voters as ballots we had. And that is a very time-consuming process. 154 polling places and rosters. 372 precincts, and the numbers just go on and on. 850 volunteer poll election people, 26 adopt-a-polls, 161 students, which is a very cool number. Students from our high schools that came and worked at the polling places. So that was a great number. And an additional 15 field inspectors. The state gives us 30 days to complete the certification of the election. Unfortunately for California, more and more activities are taking place in an election that require the certification to be a longer process. So as that continues, as that process extends, it's more and more difficult to get them done in a quick manner. And I know we had a lot of patience shown by those individuals who are running for office who I know had very close races, and it's tough for them. But our goal is to make sure that they hear it once and they hear it right, and that's what we do at our office. So with that, I'd like to present the certified copy of the statement of vote to the board for your review.
Does anyone have any comments at this time, board?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions, Mr.
You
Chairman.
Go right ahead.
Yeah. What would you say the major reasons why there's so many provisional ballots cast? You said 13,000. That's quite a bit. What are you finding when you're looking through those, why they had to vote provisionally?
A provisional vote is a second opportunity for a voter. It is, it's basically saying your name is either on the roster as a vote-by-mail voter, and you didn't come in with your vote-by-mail ballot to turn in, or you are on the roster someplace else, or you're not on the roster at all. So those would be the three main concerns we have in reviewing them. I would say more than half, almost two-thirds of those were vote-by-mails. That means an individual received a vote-by-mail in ballot in the mail, and they chose to come into a polling location. A lot of people dropped them off, but some didn't come with them at all. And when they didn't come with one, they then asked to vote. We allow them to vote, but we have to check to make sure that we didn't receive one in the mail before we count it. That makes it a provisional ballot. So that was the main aspect of them. People who chose to change their mind and not vote by mail, or maybe they waited till the last minute and they didn't think we would get it in time, so they went on election day and voted at the polls.
The people that register by mail or by online, their names probably wouldn't be on the voter list. Was that much of a problem? I remember 4 years ago that was. There was a lot of people registered.
People can register up to 15 days before the election. After 15 days, they can vote for the next election, but some of them decide to come in and vote anyway. Oh, I'm so sorry, that's me. Turn that off. When they do that, that puts them in a position that they would become a provisional voter or vote provisionally.
Was there very much of that this time?
I don't think there was a great amount. It doesn't appear that the vote by mail or the registration online is the thing it was 4 years ago. 4 years ago, there was it had just opened. It had just started, and we had many, many people at the very last minute do it. At this point in time, the process has been smoothed out. It now seamlessly attaches with our in-house program. At that time, it did not, and everyone who voted, who registered online, we had to print the registration and type it in anyway. Now we don't have to do that. So that's been corrected by the Secretary of State's office.
Well, I observed the election on election night. I thought everything was very orderly and professional.
Thank you very much.
Down at County Center 3 for a while, and I think everything was flawlessly done, and it was very professionally done, and I found no concerns at all.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Any other comments or concerns?
Yeah, just a comment, Mr. Chairman. I think as we progress and have more and more districts, and as each city council looks at districts and all the rest, I think the vote tally is just going to be later and later, and you have much a tougher job to do each election cycle. I read the article and kind of thought through that it's probably only going to get worse over time. And
you know, we don't like to use worse, longer.
The timing it takes to certify. Okay. How's that? And as candidates, I know how gut-wrenching it is waiting for those final numbers. The three-day post-election postmark only adds to it, and so you know I'm wondering if the state at some point is going to have to look at that 30-day window for certification and push it out a couple of days.
You know, it's interesting that you would say that because the state is looking at things, and it is going to get longer. Yeah. I'd say worse because they're now going to be moving towards same-day registration in California, which means it will never stop. At one point in time, you can mail the vote by mail, and you know that's it. Now people can register and keep flipping them all the way through to the very end. And that's another big process we have to do to make sure that if they asked for a vote by mail, and then they said they weren't going to use it, they wanted a new one at a new address, we may have to go through and make sure that they didn't vote at any previous address before that one counts. And that's one of the last things we do in the election. So it's all done in order so that each voter only has one vote, and it takes a longer stream of time to accomplish. So thank you for recognizing that. I really appreciate that, and I know my staff does.
Any other comment? If not, I'll turn it over to the public. Anyone wishing to make a comment at this time? If not, I'll bring it back to the board, and what is your wish?
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we approve the statement of the vote.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all.
We now will go to B7, Birgit Flatiger.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Risen, and Mr. Doering. I'm Birgit Flatiger, District Attorney, and I have the pleasure this morning of being here to introduce to you our presentation on the one-year, first-year report of the Fire Investigation Unit. This is something that I think you are going to be very impressed with. I'm very proud of it. It's been a really incredible collaboration between the county and law enforcement and fire agencies in order to come together to provide a service which is incredibly important to the citizens of this community and helps us in the DA's office do our job to make sure that we do everything appropriately in the criminal justice system. I'm going to turn it over to Lieutenant Dave Hutchinson, who really is the primary moving force that made this thing happen. He is very knowledgeable in the area. He's really quite the expert. One of our other investigators, Dustin Brule, I was hoping would be here this morning. He's not. He's busy working in this very area at the moment. So it's my pleasure to turn it over to Lieutenant Dave Hutchinson.
Thank you, Birgit. Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Investigator Dustin Brule and Investigator Ed Sears from the FIU, they're the unit coordinators. They're out on the 700 block of Rubel Road this morning on a double fatal. So that'd be the sixth fatal fatality in just 2 weeks for us in this county. And on top of what's happened in Oakland with the 36, at least at this point, 36 fatalities, it truly underlines the importance of the need for this unit. The members of the unit are, of course, the District Attorney's Office and the Sheriff's Department, who we work very closely with utilizing their evidence and explosive ordnance disposal team, the Modesto Fire Department, the Ceres Fire Department, the Stanislaus County Fire Warden's Office, and of course the Stanislaus Consolidated Fire Protection District. In the way of going back a little bit to understand why we undertook this endeavor, it's important to look at, I think, to recognize the history in the county of who used to provide this service. And prior to 1995, the County Fire and Safety Department, as it was known, provided the service. The employees of the county provided arson investigation, as it was called then. In 1995, after the creation of the Consolidated Fire Protection District, the Consolidated Fire Department took over the contract and held that contract for 10 years. And then in 2006, the Modesto Fire Department, as part of the bid with the Regional Fire Authority, bid on the contract and was awarded a five-year contract to provide the service to the entire county. So at that point, from 2006 to 2011, Modesto took over the contract countywide. In 2011, as you will recall, the Modesto Regional Fire Authority was formed. And as part of that formation, all contracts or services that were provided by the agencies that made up MRFA were absorbed into that organization. And then in 2014, when the Regional Fire Authority disbanded, the services that were provided under those contracts were then became available for other use. You'll notice in this time, at some point, we transitioned away from arson investigation and into fire investigation. And that's because when you say arson, it presupposes an outcome. We no longer do that in this field. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. At the same time, nationally, we had several issues across the country, really internationally, that affected how we did this business and why we were doing things that we were doing in certain ways. In 1991, there was and generally when I say that, I mean that science has improved tremendously over the years. And so as science improved and through the court system, both civilly through subrogation decisions and in criminal cases, we learned through the testimony of experts and so-called experts that maybe we didn't know as much as we thought we did. So in 1991, there was a fire in a town in Corsicana, Texas. It's known as the Cameron Todd Willingham case. The Willingham family lost three daughters, a two-year-old girl and one-year-old twins. The fire investigator at the time blamed or announced that the fire was an arson based on pour patterns on the floor and multiple origins, things that today we raise eyebrow at those type of statements. Mr. Willingham was executed in 2004 for those arson murders. In 2009, there was a report by the National Academy of Sciences called the NAS report. And in that report, they looked at some of the underlying science that we use in the fire investigation field, and they made some startling recommendations that perhaps we were misinterpreting things, that we weren't, practitioners of this field were not as smart as we thought we were. And most importantly, they recommended the separation of the roles of the forensic investigator or the forensic examiner and the criminal investigator, meaning that the person that decides the origin and cause of the fire, which is a forensic exam, much in the way of an exam done at a crime lab, that should be separated from the person who decides whether or not it's a crime and then pursues a criminal prosecution. After Mr. Willingham was executed, the Texas Forensic Science Commission issued a report in 2011, primarily revolving around that case specifically, but they also spoke to the field generally. One of the things that they spoke about, here's Mr. Willingham here, apologize, the NAS report, Forensic Science. And in that Forensic Science report, one of the things that they said was the separation of the roles, as I mentioned, because of the potential for bias, meaning that if the same person does the criminal investigation and the forensic exam, there's a tremendous potential for bias. The Texas Forensic Commission report, again, was in 2011, and one of the things that they said here is that the commissioners were very concerned about the perceived difference in knowledge between the scientists that study fire behavior and those that apply that study or that field of knowledge in the field. In other words, the state and local professionals that respond to fires to make the determination, they were concerned about the lack of scientific knowledge that they had when they got to the scene. Finally, in 2012, this report from the University of Denver Stern College of Law that appropriately named A Perfect Storm Brewing for Fire Investigators in Court, their concern was that a lack of independent certification for the fire investigators was setting the system up for failure in the court process, both civilly and, more importantly, and criminally. And this goes back to the Willingham case. A generation after generation of fire investigators had been taught under a mentorship style. In other words, the fire investigator that was currently in that role would accept the next generation and teach him, impart his knowledge on the next generation, but that only works if that knowledge is correct. So you literally had generations of fire investigators learning techniques that were decades old. That was what was happening nationally. Locally, what some of the issues that we had was in this county over a period of time, there was a separation. Frankly, law enforcement separated ourselves from the role. At one point, the sheriff's department had a detective that was assigned collaterally to arson, but was also the detective that responded all around and picked up fugitives that had absconded and were all across the country. So you can imagine his availability was not that great. The Modesto Police Department assigned their burglary detectives or other general crimes type detectives collaterally to the arson unit. But as you can imagine, in a city the size of Modesto, the burglary detective or general crimes detective is quite busy with frauds and other things. So they were not generally available. The last detective at the Modesto Police Department to retire was Dan Shipley. And when that happened, it was in the economic downturn, and he simply wasn't replaced. So what we are left with was the fire investigators at that time had no law enforcement support, essentially. The other issue we had was that the local fire investigators really did not meet the independent certifications that the previous reports I mentioned had encouraged. And it's really the only way to test the knowledge and to understand whether or not they understand and can apply what they've learned. These certifications are set by the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA as we refer to it. And there's certifications under 1033 that require a certain amount of training and expertise to perform the role of a fire investigator. There's a section that requires that any person supervising fire investigators must also meet these thresholds and must be able to perform the job in order to supervise those people. And that's important when you're reviewing the report and trying to catch mistakes and make sure that there's no miscarriage of justice, people being put in prison that don't belong there or worse, being executed. And then more importantly, the investigations themselves were failing to follow NFPA 921, which is the guide for conducting fire and explosion investigations. And in that, although it's called a guide, the courts have recognized that it is the gold standard for performing this function. And if you do not perform the function in compliance with NFPA 921 and also the underlying code requirements in it through the American Society of Testing Materials, then your whole investigation is suspect and can be not credible based on that alone. The other problem we had was that when you take a fire investigator from a fire suppression agency, which is not their core function, and you ask them to insert themselves into a role which is essentially a law enforcement role, you can imagine that we have a little bit of an issue there. For example, a detective in the law enforcement field, in order to become a detective, first has to be a police officer, has to go to the police academy, complete field training program, pass probation, work patrol, and in that patrol function deal with hundreds if not thousands of people, go to court dozens of times on maybe cases that aren't so significant. Basically, they learn the base of that pyramid of how to be a successful law enforcement detective. We'll just power through. So when you take a fire investigator from the fire suppression ranks and insert them into that role, it's admittedly a fire investigation starts with a fire, but the core competency and knowledge that you need to have to do what is essentially a law enforcement function just isn't there. And it's no different than if we took a patrol officer out of a sheriff's patrol car or a Modesto Police Department patrol car and gave them just a couple, 3 weeks of training and asked them to run up to the top of the Doubletree when it's on fire and then start rescuing people and effectively put out the fire. It's just not a good way to do business. We don't do that in any other area of public safety. And those things created obstacles to prosecution. These things were happening nationally, things were happening locally, the training, the disengagement with law enforcement, and then all of these issues created obstacles to our office at the district attorney where we simply had to address the issue. So what we chose was, after looking at many different models across the country, from all law enforcement models, like the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, to all fire department models, to where they send the fire investigators or the police academy. Some agencies just have the engine company officers decide if it looks what they call suspicious, and then call law enforcement and hand the case off. Well, we know that doesn't work because there's no buy-in from the law enforcement agency. So under the regional FIU model that we developed, it's a multi-agency, multi-discipline model. We have both fire and law representation. Each of those disciplines is working to their core strengths. We follow the current state of the science. In other words, we maintain the training and certification to understand what the state of the science is, and we follow that to make sure we're doing it correctly. And finally, we mitigate cognitive bias. And the impact of cognitive bias is one that is highly debated, whether you tend to be on the prosecution or the defense side. However, it is a science, and it is not just present in the forensic sciences. It is present in all of humans, and it is a real thing. And so by separating the role between the criminal investigator and the origin and cause or forensic examiner, we have done those steps necessary to mitigate cognitive bias, which is required under NFPA 921. So the partnership involves the county agencies that pay into the less than countywide tax agency, less than countywide tax, also known as the Fire Service Fund, and the City of Modesto. So we call those agencies the county, even though the city of Ceres does pay into the less than countywide tax. So for purposes of our discussion today, they're included in the county figures. Going back 10 years, it tends to be about a 50-50 split in the county between fires that occur in the city of Modesto jurisdiction and those less than countywide areas. And you can see for the reporting period of the last 12 months, it held true to that. 52% of the fires were in the county area and 48% were in the city of Modesto as of the September 30th. The origin and cause determinations, You can see here the greatest percentage at 53% is undetermined. Accidental arson is at 16, and arson's at 31%. The thing to understand here that's important is that we use the scientific method that's used in the physical sciences to determine origin and cause. We develop and test hypotheses. We look at alternative hypotheses to see if there's another way that the fire could have started. And if more than one hypothesis is possible, under the rules of NFPA 921, the fire cause or the fire origin, fire cause must be called undetermined. So if that looks like a large number, I can tell you that oftentimes we have a very good idea of what we believe to be the cause of the fire, but because of the using the scientific method in the terms of NFPA 921, we are bound to call it undetermined. That doesn't necessarily hurt us in prosecuting a case. We can take a fire cause of undetermined and then build a case circumstantially, a criminal case circumstantially, and still be successful with the prosecution. So that shouldn't, it doesn't necessarily deter us. There are only four determinations allowed when making a fire origin and cause determination, and those are, as I pointed out, arson, undetermined, accidental, and natural. The property type breakdown graph, you can see the majority of the calls that we went to were 170 structure fires at 67.5%. The primary purpose of putting together the FIU was to address the structure fire issue because that's typically where you have loss of life or injury, so that's not unusual to see that we would have the majority of the responses there. This next slide shows the number of arson cases intaken by the DA's office, meaning that they were presented by the FIU or some law enforcement agency, for example, Turlock. Turlock, the city of Turlock, although in the county and does not pay into Lessing countywide, they have their own arson and fire investigation program where they work collaboratively together, the police department and fire department, and they have very few fires, so it works for them. So although we assist each other with fire investigations, they do not respond to our fires and we do not respond to theirs. So there could be cases in this number where they submitted one or two fires that are indicated in here. But 39 cases were intaken by the district attorney's office and 30 cases were issued. That's not a bad percentage. You have to recognize that the units in the field are operating under the probable cause standard. They arrest people based on whether or not there is enough probable cause to make a case. And at the district attorney's office, of course, we have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And so there's a little bit that in that gap, there could be reasons why a case was not issued. The dispositions of the cases here, it shows that 7 people were sentenced to prison. 8 people received a combination of jail and probation. 4 people received probation only. 1 was a mental hospital commitment. Frequently, people involved with setting fires do have underlying mental health issues. That's a given. 7 people were required to register as arson registrants, and 7 of these cases are still in progress in court. There's a difference there because not every arson section, not every conviction requires registration. And if you can imagine a case where a reckless setting of a fire, where there was actually no intent, typically that would not require a person to register for life as a registrant. But that's why there might be a disparate number there. To discuss some successful cases, the first fatal fire we had after the setting up of the unit was the Goldie Avenue fire in the city of Modesto. This is the first fire we worked with the city where we had the true separation of roles, where the Modesto Police Department took on the criminal investigation and the FIU took over the origin and cause. This originally we thought we had 4 or 5 people missing in the structure. It was a I don't want to say hoarder, but there was quite a bit of property in the house, very difficult to search, and it turned out to only have 1 fatality. There was no crime associated with this case, which is just as important, as we've pointed out, to make sure that we do not charge people with crimes, of course, if there's none there. This is a picture of the Goldie Avenue residence. You can see quite a bit of debris in the front, very heavily involved in fire. The next case was the Vanessa Muhammad serial arson case. This was a series of 5 arsons set on the west side of Modesto. And interestingly enough, Ms. Muhammad was a suspect in a series of fires in series about a month prior, and the witness to that case was unable to identify the suspect. But within a month 5 weeks' time, there was another series of fires on the west side, and the FIU's proactive response and working in collaboration with Modesto PD patrol officers, we were able to apprehend Ms. Muhammad and get good witness identification. Another serial arson case was the Malden case, which happened in the Burbank Paradise area, fire district area. There was a series of fires set over a period of 2 or 3 months, ranging from fences and yards to vacant structures. Mr. Malden was arrested working in cooperation with the suppression of folks at Burbank Paradise. More recently is the Tamara Bird case. This was a multi-dwelling fire, arson fire on James Street behind the DMV. This was a three-month investigation. The fire was started in the front, spread to two residents, actually three residences, and in those residents were four children all under 10 years old that were occupying the homes at the time of the fire. A three-month investigation involving search warrants being served on social media sites as well as cell phones culminated in the arrest and charging of Mr. Bird. This is exactly the type of case that under the old system, without true law enforcement presence, could never have occurred. Finally, we had the Arrow Motel arson murder conviction. This was a tragic case of a woman being knocked unconscious, left in the motel room while it was set on fire. The first time it went to trial, it had a hung jury. The second time, with our vertical prosecutor, Deputy District Attorney Dina Petroshenko, it was guilty as charged in just 25 minutes. And we take our deputy DAs that are assigned to the vertical arson prosecution unit, and what that means is we specially train them, and so we send them to the schools. So Ms. Petroshenko has been to the forensic fire death investigation course in San Luis Obispo that we all attend. That is a course where medical cadavers are brought to the training site, put in staged crime scenes, or maybe non-crime scenes, and then the investigators are forced to process that scene to include the cadaver and then come up with the hypothesis on what started that fire and tested. We sent our prosecutor to that case so she would have the expertise necessary to work these cases, and as you can see, it paid off. Also, the separation of roles paid off here. Working in collaboration with the tremendous detectives at the Sheriff's Department Crimes Against Persons team, by separating the roles and having them focus on the criminal investigation while the FIU worked on the origin and cause, resulted in this positive outcome. So we'll discuss the funding issues. As we pointed out earlier, the fire service fund, or less than countywide tax, which was started in 1958-1959, is 1% of a person's property tax bill that's paid in for the purpose of fire prevention, fire training, fire communication, fire investigation, and administrative support. And it was mostly designed for those fire districts that were small and volunteer and just didn't have the means to provide these services for themselves. Those cities that had, incorporated cities that had paid fire departments were able to opt out, and this is why the city of Modesto and the city of Turlock at the time the fire service fund was created did in fact opt out. However, excuse me, prosecution, the thing to consider here is that prosecution is a county function. Just like providing a jail, a recorder, assessor, office, these types of things, the prosecution aspect is a county function, and providing the specialized investigation to support those prosecutions is our function as well. Just like the county bomb squad or explosives enforcement team or ordnance disposal team or our real estate fraud unit at the DA's office. This types of investigations are simply too complicated for a single agency, whether it be fire or law enforcement, to be able to perform on their own. And so it's not unusual for a district attorney's or a prosecutor's office across the country to provide these fire investigation services in order to bolster the cases. Because as we've pointed out at the beginning of the presentation, the attacks on this that helped change the way we do the service came from the courts, initially in the civil courts and then finally in the criminal courts. So it's really up to the DA's office to protect those cases to make sure that we are providing justice by properly investigating the cases and prosecuting those cases. As far as separating out Modesto when we come to trying to allocate the money, and this is why we keep the statistic of how many fires are in the city and how many are in the less than countywide area, it's problematic. And the reason is we don't do that in any other crime. In other words, we don't go to the city of Ceres or Turlock and say, this is a very complicated homicide or white-collar crime case, and so we'd like you to pay some additional money to us at the DA's office or provide additional personnel because we just can't afford to do it. It's recognized that our role at the prosecutor's office is to effectively investigate and prosecute crimes. And so, in a way, it almost seems like because there's a dedicated tax that is provided and part of this service, it almost hinders us in this arena rather than helps us, because there are some concerns about how the money can be used, which is why we've requested recently a county council opinion on how exactly the money can and cannot be spent that comes in through the fire service fund. And the reason there's confusion in the fire and law enforcement community in our county is because for a period of time from 2006 to 2011, that money actually was paid to the city of Modesto to provide this service under contract. And then once the switch was made, there was a concern that we could not provide any of that money to the city of Modesto for this service. And so we've asked recently for an opinion on that. We believe that if we're providing a higher level of service for all the citizens of the county, that that satisfies the intention of the fire service fund, and we're hoping that that will be addressed. But of course, we defer to county council and their expertise on that. We do know this, that there's not enough money in the less than countywide fund to fully fund all of the components that I mentioned earlier, the investigation, prevention, training, communications. There's just not enough money. And so even if we were to ask for all of the money, the $1.2 or $3 million that comes in, which we would not do, we do not intend to minimize the importance of the other people at that, other stakeholders in that fund, but it still wouldn't be enough. So when we look at the actual costs on the chart here, if you look at the less than countywide boxes, which shows up as black, on this chart, those are the less than countywide costs. The in-kind contributions are the lighter bar graph, lighter bars in the graph there, and then the total is the dark blue. And you can see that's broken down by the city of Ceres and the Stanislaus Consolidated Fire Protection District, which are reimbursed through less than countywide for their employees' participation as an investigator. And then you can see at the DA's office, we have a significant in-kind contribution because 50% of my salary and 100% of our criminal investigators' salary is in-kind contribution. And then finally, in the Modesto Fire Department bar graph, you can see all of their contribution is in-kind because, again, they receive no reimbursement from less than countywide. Interestingly to note on this graph, this does not, although in the in-kind contribution section, it does reflect facility costs, we are not actually paying for any facility. Originally, the City of Ceres Fire Department allowed us to occupy a vacant station, and then for about the first half of the reporting period, and then when they restaffed that station, when they received a grant, we moved into the vacant fire station at the Modesto Airport, and they are providing that as a true in-kind contribution. If they were not providing that, we believe that would be, based on real estate today, about $10,000 a month. There was some consideration given to moving into existing county facilities, such as 3705 Oakdale. However, I can tell you that trying to move five fire investigators and a canine into a facility where they need to eat, work 48-hour shifts, where they also have to sleep, as well as the vehicles and equipment that go along with that, there really was no county facility that could absorb that kind of impact, and particularly not out at 3705 Oakdale. This slide shows the contract historical data, and the purpose of this is just really to show how much money was allocated to fire investigation beginning in 2006-07 fiscal year through the contract with the city of Modesto, and then that's the blue, and then how much was actually paid from less than countywide is the red bar. And it stays pretty consistent. What was agreed by contract was paid, and then in 2009-2010, that was the last fiscal year before MRFA was created. Then MRFA was created, and you'll see there was a slight drop in the amount of money that was actually used to fund fire investigation. And then the big drop was in 2011-12 when MRFA was actually created, and there was you know, that costs a lot of money, understandably. And so a significant amount of money was taken away. Essentially, they got rid of the 40-hour investigator. So we went back to having just a shift investigator on each shift and no 40-hour-a-week investigator to do any of the follow-up, any of the law enforcement things like retrieve video, interview witnesses, book evidence, go to the lab. All of those things disappeared. And remember, as I pointed out, there was no law enforcement, dedicated law enforcement presence at this time. The next slides in the checkerboard pattern show, under the original contract, there was a 4% COLA built into the contract. So what we did is we just carried that number out, and we recognized that if that 4% COLA had been had held true, and if the much like when Consolidated Fire had the contract for a period of 10 years, had that contract carried out another 10 years, the figure at the end there, that $693,000 figure, is what the contract would be worth. And we point this out only to show that at the time that the board, the Regional Fire Authority, and then the Board of Supervisors voted to approve this, it was understood that a 4% COLA was probably a fair amount. And if you look at that over what that would be available for use for fire investigation today at 693, and then what we actually got last year at 388, you can see it's a significant difference. And we've been doing a tremendous job without that based on the determination and of the members, really. But this is quite, I think, important to illustrate how short-funded we are. As a percentage of the less than countywide fund, this red, the bars here, the goldenrod bars, show what the amount was of less than countywide attributable to fire investigation, and then the red line shows as a percentage of the fund. Other than in 2010 and 11, when it spiked up to 51% because the amount of money dropped due to the recession, it held pretty much between 30 and 38%, but hovering right around 30% seemed to be normal for the fund. So the next steps, we believe that the most important next step is for us to receive the advice from County Council and the opinion on how the money in less than countywide tax can and cannot be used, because we think that will drive the next the way we progress with this. When we stood this up, it's important to note that at the District Attorney's Office, even though there are nationally prosecutors' offices that do run fire investigation units full time, and prior to the standing up the FIU, the District Attorney's Office was the chair of the County Arson Task Force, and that's appropriate. But this really isn't our core function, and what we would prefer to do is have criminal investigators who are specialized in these particular areas assigned to task forces to protect our interests and make sure that investigations are done properly and we can have effective prosecutions, but not necessarily to run the entire unit for a significant length of time. And so when we worked with the CEO's office and the local agency partners, it was understood that we believe that we had short, mid, and then long-term plans. The short-term plan was a 1 to 3 year range. The mid-term plan was a 3 to 5 year range where we would transition into a different longer-term model. And then 5 years and beyond would be a more permanent model, if you would. So, but again, we can't really get there if we don't understand how we can use the money effectively. Next, I would like to invite our member agency partner, chief level officers, to come up and give their comments about the unit.
Good morning, my name is Matt Daly. I am the new fire chief with Stanislaus Consolidated. It's nice to meet all of you. On behalf of all the agencies, I'd like to thank you guys for having us here today. And we want to thank you for your support. Your support, along with all of our other stakeholders, are allowing us to support or to have a successful FIU program. It's important to note that this dedicated group of professionals are allowing us to provide an increased level of service to our community while realizing operational efficiencies that weren't there before. I know we're very proud of the work that they do. The work that they do is very critical in making our county a safer place to live and work. With that, I just want to thank you again for having us here today and allowing us to recognize this group, and we appreciate your continued support. Thank you.
Good morning. On behalf of Chief Slayman, who couldn't be here today, Tim Teejan, Battalion Chief, Manassas Fire Department, we'd also like to say we are very happy with the new model and the collaboration of all the agencies that are involved. And it's produced a high quality product. And I can tell you with firsthand experience during the time frames that that Dave talked about, I was involved in the investigation unit, and very early on, within a month of my being assigned there, I had a case that came across a fire in the McHenry Village area that had been dumpster fires being lit behind businesses and a threat to the business itself. I was dispatched out, went to that call, had witnesses, was able to determine the cause of the fire, had everything that I needed from my perspective, and then the next step was to effectively find the person. As Mr. Hutchinson spoke about, Lieutenant Hutchinson spoke about, the availability of the detectives was really nil because of the collateral assignments that they had to take care of. And so as a result of this, I proceeded forward and violated a Simmons admonition. So basically, the case was basically never prosecuted, never brought forward because of my inexperience in those areas. And I can tell you with 100% certainty that that wouldn't take place today, because these members are working shoulder to shoulder with law enforcement, and we're working in our areas of expertise, and we're working with each other in real time. And so from the city of Modesto's perspective, we encourage the board to continue this collaboration and support it any way necessary. So thank you.
Apologize for the squeaky shoes. Brian Nichols, Ceres Fire Department. Chairman and members, for us, and I've been in this part of this fire service in this county for over 40 years, so I was part of the original arson task force group way back when it was first created, when we had the big van and everything. I've watched it and had the opportunity to participate, observe, and be a key player in how this has changed and morphed into what it is today. Today, this is probably one of the finest fire investigative concepts and models that are out there. It works together. It has brought not only with the resource sharing of our agencies that are we're doing together, but it has also brought the district attorney and law enforcement in to be a player with that for us. It's just been a huge benefit. We used to do our own fire investigations in Ceres. We had a detective assigned to that. She had to medical out on back issues, so this was a perfect venue for us to go into this and still have a law enforcement presence in it. Our law enforcement, Chief Smith, is 100% committed to this concept also, so whatever services that they need to provide. But I would like to commend the DA's office for taking this project on. This is not only just benefits Stanislaus County, but it will become and has already become a model for other counties to look at and say, that's working. That's something that we need to look at. Thank you for your time and thank you for your support.
Thank you, Chiefs. We appreciate that, and we appreciate your support as well. And honestly, without the leadership of these chief officers and the sheriff of this county and the police chiefs and certainly the district attorney and the leadership of the CEO's office for working through this, all the issues with us and working collaboratively with the fire warden's office to get this off the ground and change the way we provided this service, this really wouldn't be possible. With that, I would like to ask if there are any questions of the board for us.
Any member of the board have a question?
Yes. Hey, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I like the model. Having an NFPA 921 certified person in here makes a lot of sense. But I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't push and prod a little bit, so I'm going to. Does the FIU have control or delegate the requirements of everybody who's working in kind? I assume this is all people's that the agency is putting into the FIU. Do you or does the district attorney regulate what certifications or training these people have?
Yes, Mr. O'Brien. What we require is that they have a minimum level of training to come into the unit, and then they are required to meet the 16 job performance requirements outlined in NFPA 1033 to remain in the unit. You have to understand that it takes about 2 years to take a journeyman level fire investigator and then send them to a combination of training and actual fire scenes to get them to where we believe they're at that journeyman level, actually. And so depending on the level of the investigator when they come into the unit, dictates how quickly they get up to speed, so to speak. We are pushing quite heavily to attain those independent certifications that I talked about earlier. I'm a certified fire and explosion investigator through the National Association of Fire Investigators and a fire investigation technician through the International Association of Arson Investigators. We have our two unit coordinators who are in the process of attaining those certifications now, but the tests only come up every so often, and so it's not something that you can just, it's a proctored exam, and it's not something that it can just be done any time. But yes, that is one of the main goals, as we stated in the MOU of the unit, that we want the members to obtain these certifications because it protects the cases and the members in court under cross-examination.
Which leads me to the next question. The people that the agencies put up, are they going to stick in the FIU, or are they going to rotate people through?
That's an excellent question, sir. And so we asked initially for at least a 3 to 5 year commitment because of the level of training it takes and the amount of time. However, we knew when we stood this up, it was done in some haste because of the dissolution of MRFA. And so we took the fire investigators from the partner agencies that were available at the time and had some level of training. Two of those investigators had other plans for their career further down the road. We knew going into this when we started last year that Captain Ed Bartley from Modesto Fire was only going to stay a year and then come out because he's a highly qualified individual, and frankly, I believe that he will move up in that organization, and so we knew that going in. Captain Jeff Santos from the Ceres Fire Department has recently announced that he would like to return to suppression. He is pursuing his fire marshal certifications and believes that that is the track he would like to finish his career on. And while being a fire investigator is certainly an important component of that, he needs to do the other components of that, which are blueprint reading, plan checking, and that type of thing. So he will be rotating back to suppression in January as well. We currently have a replacement investigator from Ceres and a replacement investigator from Modesto in the training program at the FIU for the next 5 to 6 weeks, and then they will assume their duties once they've passed the checkout rides at that time in January, hopefully. But part of the training is we provide training to the other outlying districts, both fire suppression personnel, law enforcement. We've briefed all the supervisors at law enforcement on how this model works, and continuing to reach those that higher level of training and higher level of certification is basically the core function of how we operate. Understood your question.
And that just needs to be a focus going forward.
Absolutely.
The 2 year training to get up to speed, rotation of members through there could be detrimental to it. And, you know, they might look at changing the model a hair of where they actually work for the FIU and not for.
Well, actually, sir, I really wasn't going to delve too deeply into that today, but the mid range to long range model that we've what we foresee for this is, in fact, to establish a fire investigator job classification for the county and then hire into that position. Because, frankly, for the amount of money that we reimburse to the individual agency for their personnel, by the time we train them up and then put them online and they can leave, I mean, that's their right, they're not an employee of the FIU, that there's this constant turnover. And it's exactly the same thing that we found in the law enforcement agencies. When we took a detective and sent him to forensic fire death, fire investigation 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, wildland fire investigation, and spent all of that time and money training them, frequently, by virtue of the people that we picked and the time amount of time they have on the job to be experienced, right about the time we got done training them is the time that they'd be looking to promote and move up within the organization because of that skill set. And so it really makes the most sense, whether you look at it from a law enforcement standpoint or a fire agency standpoint, that you're better to pick people that want to do this for a living and are willing to commit to that without transferring out, rolling out, retiring out soon, that type of thing. So we're on the same page, sir. Thank you.
Good deal. Turlock is still not part of Lessing Countywide, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so none of their numbers were in the number of cases?
That's correct.
Okay. So the FIU was just shy of $1.1 million in total cost.
Yes, sir.
City of Modesto had 48% of those calls, which if you did 48% of the 1.1 or 1.089 million, that's 523,000, yet their in-kind contribution was 453. So I think that probably needs to be looked at when we do the analysis of less than countywide of taking total costs versus what they're putting in. And I know that number is not always going to be even between what the in-kind is versus their true cost. and I wouldn't be afraid to show what that difference is. To have their in-kind contribution to match exactly to the dollar, I'm not sure that's absolutely accurate. Don't be afraid to show what the actual numbers are. And then the last thing I want to point out is the DA's in-kind contribution, the $232,000, is really a general fund contribution. So, you know, I say it's only costing $345,000. The real number is over $500,000. So I just, that needs to be kept in the minds of the supervisors moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Anyone else have any comment or question?
Just a comment. I think it's important to recognize. So we ask all of our member agencies to collaborate and be dedicated to each other to do good, and generally it's to be fiscally responsible and to provide a better service. And those are two important components because we weigh them out constantly. We know that we could give you all the less than countywide and you would do a better job. You would do a better job of prosecution. We know that's not reality because we represent, the less than countywide represents training for all fire departments, rural fire departments. We don't have the ability to go to paid fire departments countywide. So it's always going to be a balancing act on how we spend that money. Today I have the feeling that you're asking for more money. I didn't see that on the docket, but that's the feeling I have. And so, you know, it's something to take under advisement. It's just not something that I take lightly because I represent Denair, Houston, Keys, a lot of very needy fire departments that need more training. They need equipment, just basic equipment. So, but I appreciate the collaboration as we talk about. I mean, seeing you guys sit together, this makes me proud. And you know, fiscal responsibility as well as doing a better service for the public is what we're really aiming for. So. And just some thoughts off of my top of my head.
Thank you, sir.
Anyone else wish to make a comment?
I'm just going to kind of combine the two things that both Vito and Bill said. Great presentation, everything you guys have done here. We really do appreciate the collaboration. But then there's the devil's in the details that Bill kind of gets into, too. And so I'd love for us, and you said the ultimate goal here would to bring this back and just maybe have it just be a county position that you had. You said ultimately when you get there. That's a long-range goal, right, just to have this. And so I'd love to have you guys come back with more detail, the in-kind expenses. And great concept, collaboration, everything good, but just come back with more of the details of what's in in-kind. You know, each agency has their own thoughts of what's in there, and is there a common approach to that. So I think this is a great step here that we're moving towards. But before, you know, we feel like we can throw more money towards these things. You know, I'd love to see us come back with this is the ultimate goal. This is where we think this thing should be. This is exactly the numbers of how we're going to get there. So, but very much appreciate what you guys have put together here.
Thank you, sir. Just to be clear, today we're just providing the 12-month evaluation that we were required to under the MOU, and we recognize that if we were to ask for additional funding, that would be done in time of, you know, proposed budget and whatnot, and working in collaboration with the county fire agencies and the fire warden's office through the regional fire authority business plan where less than countywide comes from. And we have been in discussion with Chief Skiles and the fire warden's office over the last year to discuss these various models and the in-kind contributions and those very things that you've raised. We also recognize, and why I alluded to it earlier, that although in most counties, as a first responder agency, it is a general fund obligation, because of this very unique tax that we have through less than countywide, that's why I said earlier it almost hinders us, because it just prevents us from even to have the discussion of, well, we're the DA's office, we're a county office, we need to prosecute, and this is what it takes to do that, and then have you decide the priority of the board and assign you know, an equitable amount of money as you see fit. But because there's an issue over how we can use the less than countywide, it somewhat complicates the matter. And we think that once we can resolve that, we can come back to the board with specific recommendations in collaboration with the fire warden's office and then have those kinds of discussions that you're looking for. But we just can't even get there yet until we receive our direction to make sure we're not running afoul of the intent of the law. Thank you, sir.
Any more comments or concerns? If not, I'll open it to the public. Anyone have any comments at this time? I'll bring it back to the board, and
We've been asked to accept the 12-month report from the district attorney's office.
Motion to accept 12-month report.
There a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We will now go to correspondence.
This board has received letters requesting the change of school district elections from odd to even years for the Ceres Unified School District and the Patterson Unified School District.
Refer to the clerk, recorder, and registrar of voters.
This board has received a copy of the November 2016 Stanislaus County Assessment Practices Survey Report from the State Board of Equalization.
Refer to the Assessor and Assessment Appeals Board.
This board has received two letters from the California Fish and Game Commission regarding proposed regulations related to the use of dogs in pursuit and take of mammals and the potential listing of flat-tailed horned lizard as an endangered species.
That is the Fish and Game Commission.
And this board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Recognize receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. And at this time, anyone on the board have supervisors have a report? If not, then we'll go to the Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Yeah, just real quick, Governor's named his choice to be the new state attorney general position after Kamala Harris was voted to the United States Senate. So Representative Xavier Becerra from Los Angeles has been selected. And also the Senate now has a supermajority of Democrats in the Senate. And so we'll be watching to see what implications that has. We know that there'll be at least two transportation bills introduced. One by Frazier and one by Beal, and the Senate will be reconvening on Monday, December 5th. Beyond that, I have no other report.
Okay.
I do have one announcement.
Fine.
If I may, Chair, Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors will be holding a workshop today, December 6th. It was scheduled to start no earlier than 10:30 a.m., given the hour of the board meeting here. It'll probably be more practically around 11 o'clock when the board retreats. That'll be at the starts. That'll be at the Salida Fire Station number 14 at 5551 Ciccarelli Road, Salida, California.
In that case, this meeting is now adjourned.
The best way to get to the fire station from here, how are you?